everyone, and welcome to episode 122 of season 11 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. Today, we have yet another interview episode as we close out part nine of the miniseries, and I am very pleased to have a conversation with Tim Matthews, who played Alex Pinkala in the miniseries. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks, Rob. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing your perspective on everything. So let's start with from the beginning. Do you remember how you got the part?
Yeah, I guess like every other young adult male in the UK at that point, I was sent to a fairly general audition where I was given, I think, some lines for, oh my God, who's the guy who loses his sight temporarily? Forgotten the character name.
Blythe.
Yeah. Some of his lines, and I think maybe somebody else's, I forget. Read those, and then got a call back. I can't remember exactly the sequence of events, because there were five auditions.
Right. Did you know what Band of Brothers was beforehand? I mean, had you heard of the book or heard of the story or anything like that? Or it was a blind casting call from that perspective?
Yeah.
It's like everyone in England was going out to try and get parts in this miniseries. So, that's what you did.
Yeah, just another audition, really. I didn't used to get too excited. I'd been acting for quite a long time by then already. I began acting when I was 11, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By the time that audition came along, I was fairly kind of long in the tooth, so I didn't sort of allow myself to get too excited about things because, I was fairly wise about the fact that these things don't usually work out. So I was just, I was happy to go, but I wasn't thinking too much about where it was going to lead. So I think on the third or fourth audition, I was reading some malarkey dialogue, I think. They did tell us that they didn't know who was going to be playing who or who we were auditioning for. And then there was a gap. I had a gap after the fourth audition. And my agent started to sort of get a bit suspicious. So she chased up the production company because she wondered if they'd forgotten about me because of all the people they were seeing. And I think actually it was a valuable call, because I think it did kind of get them thinking again. So they got me back in for a fifth audition. And that was the one with Tom Hanks. And I read some of Malarkey's lines.
What was that like meeting Tom Hanks at that point?
It's surreal, really. Going into a room with him and two other people. It was a fairly quick meeting. They kind of wanted to just get on with it and record the session. So I don't remember it being very long, just 5 minute situation, really. He was very pleasant, very energetic and positive, did the thing and off I went. And then I found out fairly soon afterwards, because it was only 2 weeks then until boot camp.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And by boot camp, you already knew who you were going to be playing, or it was also still up in the air at that point?
No, I think I knew. Wait a minute. Yeah, no, I knew, but it was pretty last minute and there wasn't much in the script. I mean, Alex Pinkala wasn't a very well fleshed out role anyway, because obviously he died when he was very young and there wasn't a great deal of information about him. So, this, if you look at my screen time and the script, it's not a lot of dialogue. Right. So I didn't have much information really going into the series.
Right. I mean, not a dialogue, but you're there. You're always in the background. You're always with other people, even when, you're not necessarily. I mean, that's one of the things I from my understanding of what they did was, is that even the characters, the characters who had names that didn't have as much dialogue in a particular scene, they were still there. They were doing stuff in the background, which is also one of the reasons why they kept you all there so many months, even when you weren't doing much.
Sure. Part of the kind of masterstroke of sending us to boot camp was so that when we came out of that, we would behave en masse. We'd behave like a unit. And that carried over onto set for quite a good portion of the shoot anyway. We never really let that go. We always behaved, I think, as a unit as far as we could. when we were on set. So it definitely worked. And having us hanging around and, available was part of the same thing, really. I only mentioned that my character didn't have a lot of screen time because going into boot camp, I didn't really have an idea of who this person was. So it's not like I was in boot camp, kind of, connecting with my character because there wasn't really a person. I didn't feel there was a personality or a character really to connect with at that point. It was just a young man who was going into war.
Okay, and what was the experience of boot camp like?
Well, I did not enjoy it. I did
Well,
not enjoy
you're
it.
not supposed to.
I'm not, I don't seek misery. I'm not somebody who, I'm not really into sort of putting myself through that kind of those kinds of rigors. So not really one for physical hardship,
Okay.
unless
What
it's
did they tell
necessary.
you before boot camp? Like, how did they sell the idea of boot camp to you?
They didn't. It's just, it wasn't a choice. It
No,
was
obviously it
just
wasn't a
that, oh,
choice,
by the
right?
way.
It obviously wasn't a choice. It was either do boot camp or don't do the show. That I understand. But did they say, okay, we're doing a boot camp and this is what you're going to be doing over the course of these 2 weeks of the boot camp? Or they're like,
Hell no.
okay, this is part of it.
My agent just said, oh, there's a boot camp thing, by the way. I was like, a what? Yeah, I don't know, like a boot camp thing. I think they need you to go and train. Right. Well, what? And she said, yeah, it's in a couple of weeks. So you might need to sort of get yourself ready for that. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to get myself very ready in 2 weeks. I'm not going to be any fitter in 2 weeks, really, than I am now. So I didn't really give it too much more thought. And I just turned up on the day. I didn't know what to expect. That's quite typical of me. I probably didn't think it through enough.
Okay. And did you feel that other members of the cast prepared more, or also they were the same way?
My overly sort of simplified version of this is that the Americans were all pretty fit anyway. They all looked quite buff, and I got the impression that they, part of being an actor in the US has always, especially back then, it's more, that was more part and parcel of your identity as an actor, was to be quite physically fit and to have, a good physique. And I felt like, and this may not be true, but at the time I justified my own my own physical condition as being a typical British person who smoked and drank and didn't really care, which felt true of some of the other Brits, if I'm honest with you. I think the people bringing up the
At least you
rear,
weren't
the people
alone.
bringing up the rear were British. Sorry?
At least you weren't alone.
No.
Weren't
At the
saying
back
like
there were a few
Tim's the slacker. They're saying, okay, all the Brits are the slacker.
of us.
It's that communal thing. It's, I guess that's something that can you can bond, more with the Brits that way.
Right. A commiserating cough at the back. No, I mean, I'm exaggerating. I'm sure it wasn't that bad, but that was how it was for me. I hated all of that stuff, the running and all the physical nonsense. I was kind of all right with the mental stuff. That didn't really get to me. My mental barrier was with the physical stuff, if that makes any sense. I wasn't too worried about the other stuff. And I know it was hard for some people, but I think some people had a lot more pressure. I was at Dale Dye. I had a chance to, I did a bit of an interview with Dale Dye for someone else, which has just remained private, it turns out. And he claims to remember me at boot camp. I mean, he probably does. And he
So you
says,
were the guy
yeah,
all the way in
he's
the back.
sorry, the guy at the
Exactly, because
back.
you're the guy in the back. Obviously, they're going to remember you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The miserable slow guy at the back. And he said that I had grey manned my way through. He said, yeah, you didn't. He said, it's a tactic, isn't it? You don't put your head up, you don't want to stand up and be counted. You just want to get through it without too much drama. And he's right. I did. I just kind of kept my head down and got on with it. I didn't speak up too much. I didn't challenge anyone else or myself too much. So that was my tactic. And I wasn't given a lot of responsibility because my character didn't have that kind of role. So
Right. Well, your character had a role that you just had to follow orders. That's the thing. So.
yeah. Whereas some of the guys were given quite a lot of responsibility because the characters had that responsibility, and that was tough on top of everything else.
Oh, well. And did you feel that you were bonding with the other actors also during that time?
Sure. Yeah, misery loves company, doesn't it? And also, there were a lot of funny guys. That witty, funny, charming people. So there was quite a lot of laughter, a lot of kind of what's the word? I'm still only halfway through my coffee.
jovial time.
You know, not hysteria. What's the word? Never mind. It'll come back to me. You know, when you're kind of cracking up because you're losing it a little bit.
I mean, did you feel that if you don't do things right, they're gonna kick you out of the show also? Or
I
you're like,
think that
what were the
became
stakes that
apparent
you
quite
felt?
quickly.
You know,
Sorry.
I said, what were the stakes that you felt while you're doing the boot camp?
Yeah, well, look, that played out quite clearly in real time in the first day or two, really, because I think any illusions we had of being able to get through it as actors was stamped out because we were treated like soldiers, so we were not allowed to sort of maintain our egos, as it were.
And they kept
And
that
it
up
was very
24/7.
apparent.
They kept that up 24/7.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like it
Yeah.
wasn't at night that you guys could all sit down and you know shoot the shit or anything like that. It was at night you had curfew, you had to go to sleep and you know things like that.
I mean, it was different. We maybe got to load our ammo belts or polish our boots or something, and there was a bit of chit chat, but we weren't left to our own devices very often, and we were expected to maintain our American accents at all times, and we were not necessarily encouraged to, you know, fall back into our old selves. There wasn't time, really. No.
Okay. And it was 2 weeks straight. Like there was no break in the
12,
middle.
10, 12 days. I don't know. Some say it was 5 days. Some it was 4 months. I can't remember. I think it was like 12 days. 11? I
No,
don't know.
my question is did you guys get any time off during the time that you were there, or it was straight through?
There was a few hours one afternoon, which I think was quite an interesting time for some people. But I remember walking outside at that point, and the walls in the courtyard started to sort of pulsate slightly, which
Oh,
was a bit worrying. I think it was a bit of sleep deprivation.
okay, but again, they want you to feel the way that these guys supposedly felt.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we were a bunch and still are a bunch of actors who were pretending, and it was only 10, 12 days of our lives. You know, really no big deal. We weren't going to be hurt or sent off to die. However, they did want us to have as close to an experience of that process as they could create, so they did not make it easy. And that is it is it does wear you down. It does have an effect, and it does build you up in a way that we wouldn't have been able to do had we not done the boot camp. I'm sure everybody said this.
If I remember correctly, you were the first person who was at boot camp that I'm speaking to. So,
Okay, sorry. I kind of assumed you'd have had this conversation a few times.
no, not at all. I want unique content each time,
Okay, well, oh, I can say anything I like then.
That's right. You can say whatever you want, and there's nobody to contradict you.
Okay, so yeah.
I mean, I spoke also with Freddie Joe, so you know, I got that perspective on it, but not the you know, you, it's that was top down, and this is bottom up from that
All
perspective.
right.
Did were there guys that, and you don't have to name names, I'm not asking to name names, but were there guys that were causing problems that they threatened to like kick off the show? Because of the way that they were acting during the boot camp, or they weren't as strict with that. Because as you said, at the end of the day, you guys are all actors. You know, you're there to learn the process. You're there to learn what these men went through. You know, when they were going through Toccoa and all that stuff. But on the other hand, you know, they still wanted to keep some level of discipline and make sure that you all understood what was going on. So, you know, you got a bunch of 20-something-year-old actors who know that you're not sending them to war after this. So, there might be guys that just didn't take it as serious and just said, you know what, I'm just gonna pass through these days and then, get paid to do what I want to do, which is act. You know, so.
Well, I don't remember whether this was said explicitly, but it was absolutely accepted as reality, was that we would not be able to go on and do the series if we didn't complete boot camp properly,
Okay.
if we couldn't do that. We had to play by the rules. We had to do it well. I mean, I think there were a couple of things. I don't remember exactly what they were. I think it was around sort of injuries, and people kind of maybe trying. I don't want to accuse anyone of trying to get out of anything. That's not
No, I
fair.
get
But I
it.
think,
I'm not asking you to name names. You can just.
well, I don't think it was that anyway, but there were times where there were conversations about, look, are we doing this, boys, or are we not doing this kind of thing? You know, like,
Meaning
you need
a
to think.
murmurs of mutiny?
Well, not, no, nothing that strong, but I think there was definitely a time where there were some injuries, and that was a problem because production were not happy about that. So maybe I misinterpreted the conversation, but I interpreted the conversation as, you need to, if anybody's got an injury, you need to speak up now, but as in, don't speak up. Just keep it to yourself and get on with it. That's what I interpreted it as, because I remember somebody was complaining of some injuries, and I was thinking, please don't speak up, please don't speak up. And they didn't. So
What type of injury?
it
Like a
was.
sprained ankle, or just that their muscles hurt because they were, doing things that they haven't done in their life?
Both of those kinds of things, back pain, repetitive strain injuries, blisters. A lot of people had terrible blisters from their jump boots because we had original jump boots throughout.
Okay, again, that makes sense
Yeah.
because they're not properly broken in, so I can understand that.
We were up at 5 a.m. every day to do either physical training or a run. And then we'd be straight out, we'd have breakfast. Then we were straight out doing field exercises. Some kind of drill, which would be pretty intensive. We'd be doing that kind of thing all day, and then some kind of maneuver, and then we'd go back and eat, and then we'd have a session in the evening where we'd have we'd be in the mess hall, and Dale Dye would be talking us through some aspect of warfare or the Second World War or being a soldier or whatever it is. So we'd have quite a long session of that, and then we'd have to go and do clean up, or like I say, cleaning our weapons, disassembling, reassembling our weapons, learning our rifleman's creed. But there was not really any downtime.
Okay, again,
So we were exhausted as well, which was part of it.
right, I
So,
get
but
it.
after a few days of everybody kind of acclimatizing and realizing that, okay, this is real. We have to do this, and oh, this is pretty horrible. The sense of camaraderie, I think, began to increase. And at a certain point during the process, probably two-thirds of the way in, I forget, there was a sense of, having been stripped down, as they do in the military, there was a sense
The
of
point of
being
it,
kind of
yeah.
built up as a unit. And we all started to feel that, I think, or certainly most of us started to feel that sense of collective pride, and probably even a bit of elation at times, for having some compliments or something, being singled out for doing something well.
That's a good
But
thing
we
too.
had a collective feeling of, we're starting to be good at this. There's some sort of soldierly stuff going on, and we look like we know what we're doing, but not because we're trying to look like we know what we're doing, but because we know what we're doing. It's going in, it's sinking in, and we have the pride, and by that point, I suppose, the tenacity to actually see it through. So while we were there, that process was, felt, I think, quite profoundly. And that also meant that people wanted to do it. They wanted to finish it. They wanted to do it well. And by that point, they could see the rewards, the benefits of doing that. So I think that collective feeling was very powerful as well, as the, as well as being under the boot, we were all quite proud to be there by towards the end, I
Right.
think.
So you were happy, and that you ended up doing
I wouldn't go that far, Rob.
that. Well, looking back after 25 years, you can say that you were happy that you did it.
You know
You
how
wake
you
up
have a life experience that.
in the middle of the night now, still cursing the fact that you had to spend 10 to 12 days doing a boot camp to be in Band of Brothers.
No, of course not. I still wake up in a cold sweat to Dale Dye's voice. No, it's like those experiences that are so unique in your life that you would never be without them, even though they were miserable. A lot of people have this about
Of course.
difficult experiences. It's not that bad. It wasn't traumatizing. But for something that was not enjoyable at any step of the way, it of course has left an indelible mark on me, and I wouldn't be without it. I'm able to have a conversation with people who are interested, and it is a one-off kind of experience.
Right.
So that's a wonderful thing.
I mean, have you ever had to do something similar to that, throughout your career ever since? No. You see, so
No.
there you go. It's unique from that perspective.
Absolutely.
Have you had the
Everything about
opportunity and you said no?
that. No, although I may well have said no had the opportunity come up.
Oh, come on.
But
You said that Dale Dye remembered you. So if Dale Dye would have said, Tim, we want you to come back and do another one of these, because you were so good the first time. You might say, oh, well, if Dale Dye is inviting
yeah, that would mean something. Yeah, sure. That would mean something. I'm too old now.
we all get older. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
But hey, Dale Dye was probably closer to our age now than our ages then. So, and he was able to do it.
Oh, God, yeah, don't say that. Yeah, you're quite right. No, that's embarrassing, isn't it? But he was living and breathing this stuff.
It's life. That's the way it is,
Yeah, no, of course. And he would get up in the morning and live and breathe this. Well, way before we came along, he'd been doing all of
Oh,
this as well.
for sure.
Man, he's a formidable person. That's not a fair comparison. I'm not sure he's human.
He's not human. That's a separate issue. Okay. So he's a Terminator? Is that what you're telling me?
Something like that.
Okay.
We all have, I think, I say all, I shouldn't say that. I'm aware that many of us have very fond memories of him, and we've all encountered him in more recent years and had wonderful times with him. And it's been very different, call him Dale.
Well,
In
he's not
fact, so
yelling at you. He's not yelling at you and saying, give me 200
no, he isn't. He isn't.
push-ups.
In fact,
And
so much has this.
even if he does, you'll just say no.
Exactly. No, Dale. You do
Exactly.
200 push-ups. I'd like to see you do 200 push-ups. He we were in Normandy, and we were in an event, and we were having some drinks after the event, and I was sitting down in a very comfortable position, and he came over to me and he clicked his heels together and he did this, and I just kind of smiled and went, ha. And it's fine. And then a little bit later, he came over and he put his arm on my shoulder. He said, "When an officer salutes you, it's a sign you ought to stand up." And he was just being cute, but I'd forgotten. That was a mark of respect, and I'd forgotten. That would not have happened at boot camp, obviously.
No, I don't think so.
There would have been consequences.
Yes. No, but again, what type of consequences? I mean, did they punish the guys, with mild punishments?
Yeah, you'd be doing push-ups or something, some physical thing that you don't want to do. Yeah,
Right.
absolutely.
Okay. No, that from a, I guess, learning perspective and a teaching perspective, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's not as if you
All
could
of
just
it.
say screw you and that's it. It's like, no, if you want this part and you want to do this, you're going to now give me 200 push-ups or whatever it is,
Oh
or
my God, yeah.
you're
All
going
that
to run
is.
up Kurahi.
Right, there'd be verbal dressing down as well. Because if you're in the military, like what the hell are you doing? Why are you screwing around? Obviously, if it's national service and you didn't choose it, then you maybe you have some feelings about being there. Maybe you are going to be a clown because you're like, screw you. But when you've chosen, you've signed up to be in the military, or you've signed up to be in a TV series about the military, and you start dicking around and trying to thwart the efforts, the collective effort. I mean, you are a dick. So
Right, completely.
fair enough.
I agree. That makes sense.
Nobody did that.
Right. Okay. Again, you all were actors who wanted to be a part of this. You probably didn't realize at the time, but this historic miniseries.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I mean, that it makes sense from that perspective. Okay. So you finished boot camp, and then you probably had a little bit of time between then and starting to shoot. What was that like starting to shoot, especially for someone like you whose character doesn't have that many things that they want you to do, but they still are gonna have you do things, in the background, stuff like that.
But fun fact, before we got to go home, we were marched. We finished boot camp. They took us back to Hatfield, where we began. We were in full cost. I seem to remember we were either in full costume or we got into full costume, and we were marched down to set, which was on an airfield because they were shooting. I think it was maybe a mile. And Dale Dye marched us from HQ down to the set where they were shooting, and we did it properly in formation, in time, singing some. Marching songs, turned up on set in formation, and he had us do a couple of things. as a unit. We did not break that formation. We didn't meet anyone or break character, and then he marched us back. And I mean, that left quite a big impression, I think, on everyone, because that was quite an impressive thing. It's the first time anyone had met the actors, you know.
Right.
So that was quite a big deal. I remember that. And then we got to go home. But no, I mean, they did boot camp and shooting. We were into
Okay,
it.
so but since you weren't in the Kirby episode, or you were in the Kirby episode, but just for the Normandy parts, you were probably like when they're watching the movie or whatever.
So sorry, no, yeah, Pencala didn't join them in
No,
France.
that's
He
right.
joined them
Yeah, I forgot that Pencala
in
joined them a little bit.
Old
He joined
Forum.
them in America still, but he wasn't there during. He wasn't at the call.
He joined them in Aldbourne, I think, in England, didn't he? Went over on the
No,
plane.
from what I understand, he joined them when they were still in the States, maybe when they were doing their jump training.
Okay, but he didn't he did I thought he joined them in England and jumped from there. Sorry, and then they went over from there. Either way,
It
anyway,
doesn't matter.
I was in the plane. There's a scene where I'm in the plane. There was a whole scene where I was vomiting, actually, that was cut because
Were
the
you really
technical
vomiting, or you were?
right. Yeah, no, it was chicken soup sent up a tube in my sleeve, but they couldn't get it to work. We couldn't get a take where it worked. I remember the director being quite angry, and I don't think he got what he wanted, so that didn't make it. So I was on, yeah, he was I was on the plane there. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the early days where I guess we were trying to gauge how it was going to go, you know, as actors. If you didn't have lines in a scene, were you in the scene? Because there was a lot of ensemble stuff. And what did that mean? What does that look like? So quite a lot of it was being soldierly and being around, which was fine. And then there was a lot of, like with every other TV show I've ever done, a lot of sitting around reading or playing my guitar or something.
Okay, if you're getting paid to read or play your guitar, that's I can't really complain from that perspective.
I'd take that gig now, absolutely.
No, but you also want the screen time as an actor, so there's two sides of the same coin from that perspective.
So just if I may just quickly interject there then. So that's one of the things for me. A lot of the guys have a lot to say about their characters and how they felt portraying that character and how they connected with the character, because I think they had either a character that had been written and fleshed out reasonably well, or they met the living person, or you know, that living person had survived the war and there was some accounts of them as a person beyond that. And I was playing someone who was 20 when they died. Whose family members had not been contacted, or you know, there was no
Right.
dialogue.
My understanding was that they weren't contacted, because I spoke a few weeks ago with two of Alex's nephews, and they
Yeah.
told me a lot about it, and they said that they only learned about Band of Brothers like 6 months after it came out. They only learned that their uncle was a part of it. So I only
That's
know
Tim
that
and Ruth.
you probably didn't speak to them beforehand.
Yeah, sure. So that's Tim and Rudy, I imagine
Yes.
you spoke to.
Very good. I guess you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, we have met. We've communicated. I haven't had as much contact with them as I'd hoped. I'm quite busy these days in terms of
That's a good thing.
it's quite hard to engineer. I'd like to see them in person, but they live in the States, so it's not that straightforward.
Right. I mean, setting up the conversation with them wasn't easy either because of the time differences. Because Rudy's in Indiana and Tim is in San Diego, but we found a time that worked for all three of us, and had a great conversation about Alex and things like that.
Right, yeah. Well, they're great. My contact with them has been lovely, but been very positive. So that wasn't in place at the time, and so I, you know, I didn't. And from a completely selfish point of view, as a young actor, I was kind of like, I don't really have much of a role. It's nice to be here. Very lucky to be doing this show. I'm getting paid very well, you know, for someone my age at that time. And I was very pleased to be part of it. But I wasn't really thinking about it much when I wasn't on set. I wasn't thinking about how to improve my portrayal, which maybe says more about me than it does about the situation. But I didn't feel like I had a lot to work with, or that it, you know. So I don't have a lot of that. I don't have a lot of those feelings. I don't have a lot of those experiences to communicate. So there were things, you know, about portraying a young man at war, obviously, and some of the experiences along the way. They do tend to put you in mind of what that may have been like at times. You know, the the indoor forest that we had in Hatfield
Mm-hmm.
to portray Bastogne was very convincing. And once you're in there, apart from the fact that it was warm, once you're in there and there are pyrotechnics going off and there's fake blood and things and people screaming, it's quite chilling at times. So that, you know, there was a lot of that that did sort of connect us. But yeah,
Did you have any
a
interactions
lot.
with the other veterans asking them what they remember about Alex?
I didn't really. I mean, that was never set. But also, I guess I wouldn't really have asked. I didn't feel it was my place to contact them. I hadn't really been sort of
No,
invited to do that.
my understanding was a number of them were on the set constantly.
Oh, I see. Well, Muck, obviously, Alex's, you know, the guy he died with was dead. Malarkey, I've forgotten when he passed away.
Don Mularkey, I think, died in 2016 or 2017. He was there.
Okay. He must have been around. I can't
And
remember if I met
I
him.
know that Garnier was also apparently on set a lot.
Yeah, I met him. I don't know. I wasn't a very
Okay,
assertive
that's fine.
person, so I didn't. I don't like to bother people if they haven't sort
Right. Okay, that's fair. I mean, you do get a line where you call Skip Muck, trying to remember what you called him because he was talking about that he swam across the Niagara River.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I improvised that line.
Did you really?
I
Okay.
remember that. Yeah.
I think you called him. I think you said you're an idiot or something. Oh, I can't remember the exact
Yeah,
line.
yeah. He said, what was it? That my mum and Faye gave me hell or something. And Malarkey said, no, not Malarkey. Lars says, sweet Faye Tanner. And then there's a little pause. And then I go, well, she had a point. You're an idiot.
Right.
Which wasn't the script. As far as I remember, I think we were told to sort of ad lib a bit and they kept that in.
Oh wow! And nobody got upset at you for
I mean, I guess it worked.
that.
I think I improvised that. I hope that's not a misremembrance. No, I definitely did. Yeah, because but you can see the guys kind of react. It wasn't scripted.
Oh wow! Okay, that's great. You see, so your feeling of not being able to contribute, there you go. You're wrong. Right. So Right, so it's at the beginning of part seven. Can you get any more stupid than that? Probably not. Right. I swam across the Niagara once. Yeah, I swear. On a bet? What? In a barrel? No, I didn't go over the falls, George. I swam across the river, 10 miles up from the falls. I tell you, that current is damn strong. Oh yeah, must have carried me at least 2 miles downstream before I got across. But I got across. Now, personally, I didn't think it was all that stupid. But my mom, my sister Ruth, they gave me all kinds of hell. Yeah, I bet, Muck. So did Faye. Ah, sweet Faye Tanner. Got it, George. Well, they had a point. You're an idiot. That was your line.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure that was improvised, although it does sound like it was written, doesn't it? Because otherwise, where would it have ended? But I definitely wouldn't have made that up. Yeah,
No, I'm reading it from the subtitles, so it's not from the original.
I got you.
So, but
Yeah, that's a little bit.
we'll
There
give
was.
Tim credit for that. Why not? That makes sense. I don't have.
Maybe one of the other boys can remind me whether that's true. I'll have to ask Richard. There was we were encouraged to do a bit of that because in episode 6 and 7, that's the build up to Muckham Pencala being killed, and the fallout from that is quite profound for some of the other characters. So they needed to make sure that we didn't just die and no one really knew who we were. That was quite, it was encouraged that we would build that camaraderie.
Okay, and it makes sense. I mean, again, you also were in boot camp with them, so that was also part of it. And did you already know at the time that this was going to be your fate? Like as soon as you got the part, they said, okay, this is your character. You're going to be playing Alex McCullough, and he's going to die with Skip Muck in part seven. That type of thing.
Pretty sure, yeah.
I
I
figured.
don't remember a time where I didn't know that, by
Right. Okay. Again, it makes sense, because they're hiring you for seven parts, not for all 10.
to sign a contract.
That's fair. It's sliding scale. You're only on seven episodes, not 10.
Yeah, bit of a giveaway.
Okay. And what was it like with the actual death scene? I mean, was it mostly pyrotechnics? Was it special effects?
Well, it was all live studio. It wasn't digital. It was just visual effect, which again is one of the real kind of, I think it's one of the enduring things about the series. What makes the series seem fairly timeless is the lack of digital effects, or the relative lack, after the stuff with the planes early on. It's all special effects. So they made two effigies, in uniforms with papier-mâché heads and uniform filled, I think, with watermelon, which they blew up. So they filmed us in situ, as you see in the series.
Right. Come on, come on, come on.
Called
Trying
to
to get
them.
Luz to crawl over to you guys. Oh, wow.
And then, there's a freeze frame and then a splice of the film with the split second after those, or just as maybe you even get a split second of those effigies, but I doubt anyone's frozen it on a papier-mâché
Yeah, probably not.
head, because that would be terrible. So it's the second that all, yeah, it's pretty horrific. So we watched that, and yeah, that was a moment. That was moving. That was pretty moving. It's unimaginable, though. The whole thing is, I find the whole thing kind of unimaginable. I've done some walking tours of these places and tried to put myself there. I've tried to put myself in, give myself some sense of the horror of what went on, and I can't. I mean, I kind of think I can, and then, but I know I can't. I know I can't possibly put myself in that situation. It's awful that those men were killed. And then there's part of me that thinks if they really were vaporized the way everyone I think believes they were, they would have known nothing. And
That's
I
right.
guess if you're going to be killed in battle, that might be the way you'd want to be killed.
Probably.
But I mean, what do I know?
Right. Okay. Can you think of any other stories of things on set that that stand out in your memory of maybe other scenes that you shot or things that happened while you were filming?
I cut my head open when we were rehearsing the sequence on the dike in Holland just before the SS
Crossroads.
division is encountered. That's it. And there's a scene where we scramble up this thing and then we scramble down the other side. And it's, steepish. I mean, with our equipment. And Dale had taken us through a rehearsal in a military way, directed us militarily. And we'd rehearsed that four times or something. And then we were showing the camera crew and the first assistant director a run through of that. And I was electing each time to run down. Most people slid down, and I didn't really want to do that. So I was running down, which was fine. I've got quite good balance, or so I thought. And then on one of the last one, I tumbled, and all of my gear went up in the air, and something, either I can't remember what I had my rifle, obviously, my helmet, my webbing, but I had some of the mortar because Ben Carlo was a mortarman, obviously. Something went up in the air and then just fell on, cracked me right on the skull. So I kind of immediately did that, and there was blood. I had a big gash in my head. So Dale Dye, of course, saw me, and he went, "Ah, Pancala, blood on your rifle. I'm sexually stimulated," because he would have to say something like that. So that's the sympathy I got.
Okay.
I had to go to hospital and have that tended to.
Did you have to have stitches or wasn't that?
No, yeah, it's, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I've got a scar like that on my head. So that's my Band of Brothers scar.
There you go. You'll
You can't
never
see
forget. You'll never forget it. That's why you always have to grow your hair long like you do.
it.
To cover up your Band of Brothers scar.
Yeah, and I'm not the only one with a scar. A few other people got injured. Oh, I think I had my ear perforated as well. My eardrum was perforated. We had an extra had to stand in for malarkey.
Oh wow.
And
No.
just for a moment, and he didn't know the rules about, he didn't know how we do it. And being the number one gunner, I think is what it was called, I'm the one who has to say aim or hang fire. So I wouldn't say fire until fire, I put my head or my ear away. And he heard action and he dropped it, and my head was here.
Wow.
So that wasn't pleasant. And there was definitely a spot of blood on my eardrum. So I think I perforated my eardrum. So there were quite a few things like that. Someone got quite a nasty cut on their face with a bayonet in a scene. I mean, inevitably these things happened.
Oh wow. Okay. All right. So you finished part seven, and they send you home at that point, or you still stuck around a little bit longer?
I can't remember whether they shot everything in sequence. I don't remember.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Because I know the guys went off to Switzerland for 2 weeks, and I was still on the show at that point, and that's episode 9, I think, isn't it? So I don't think it was all in sequence.
Well, Switzerland is the no. Switzerland's 10, I think.
Is it?
Because nine is the when they reached the concentration camp. So that was still in Germany, and then Austria. They got to
Okay.
Austria in part 10. But okay, I mean,
Austria, okay.
doesn't make
Which
any
they
sense.
shot in Switzerland. I
Right,
think they
right,
shot
right.
in
No, I
Switzerland.
understood. I understood what you meant from that. Okay, so the show wraps, and they were. I'm assuming you were invited to Normandy. to take part in the festivities, I guess you could say.
Yeah, the premiere.
The premiere. What was
Yeah,
that
that
like?
was something. That was something. Yeah, they put a huge. They built a cinema in a tent in a marquee on Normandy, pretty much on Normandy Beach. Not literally on the beach, but pretty close, and screened it in there, and they invited everybody, and then we all went back to Paris on the train to a beautiful hotel, and everyone got drunk,
That's what I've heard. I've heard from people
including.
that most people don't remember very much of it because there was a lot of alcohol involved.
Yeah, a lot of young actors who'd been all that pent up or whatever it was, allowed to be actors again and celebrate their thing. But also some of the veterans were there. I remember hanging out with Bill Garnier and Babe Heffron, and boy, could they drink! I mean, it wasn't until sort of midnight that they started drinking their Whiskey Macs. Do you know what a Whiskey Mac is? I think I had one with them, and I went to bed shortly after that. But I
And they
think
were
I got the
up all
impression.
night continuing to drink their whiskey.
Yeah. They were just warming up. He was something, a real one off.
Yeah, I was. I've been told that he was toned down a lot in the show, and
Yeah, it would have been an 18 probably, rather than a 15
exactly.
rating.
And anyone who's seen it knows that Frank John Hughes still does a very extreme impression of him.
Ah, okay, right, the real one. Yeah, so they were pretty amazing times. I wish I remembered more about the whole experience, the whole day, but
Was because you were drinking all your whiskey Max, so you don't remember it all.
yeah, and it's one of those strange things where there's a lot of just kind of milling around and talking to people in various different places, and then there are a couple of key events around which the whole thing's built. So there's not, I don't have a very good memory either, Rob, unfortunately. So
Again, it's 25 years ago. Come on.
yeah, that's
I
true.
can't expect everyone to remember everything. That's okay. So when the show finally premiered, how did you watch the episodes? Did you watch them like with friends, family? Hey, look, we see Tim. He's in the back there. Or we see Tim and he's improvising lines. Yeah.
I didn't watch it for 20 years or more. No,
Seriously?
just yeah. I just
Because it traumatized
no. I just never.
you?
I never got around to it really. But also, every time I thought about watching it, and everyone would say it's this amazing series, I'd say I'm sure it is, but I can't imagine watching it and not just seeing the boys. Which just takes it robs it of a lot of the impact. It's very difficult to forget that kind of thing and watch it as it is. But
And
then.
when you did watch it,
I think it was maybe 6 or 7 years ago when I watched it.
okay,
Yeah, it was great.
that's what COVID did. Give us all time to sit and catch up on things.
Well, exactly. I think it might have been that actually. Yeah.
Makes sense. If you say it 6, 7 years ago, it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic series, and I think there was enough distance for me to sort of take it as it came. It's brilliant. I mean, what can I say that hasn't been said?
Oh, for sure. But I still want to hear your opinion on it. That's especially it, someone who was part of the production and then only saw it for the first time 20 years later. So that's were you looking at it and saying, "Wow, we all look so different then and now."
Well, I wasn't thinking that. No, actually.
Okay. Good.
What was I thinking? No, I think I was able to just watch the series and appreciate it for what it is. How cleverly the narratives run through each episode, how well they deal with all of the things they deal with. It hits very hard, but it's also, it's full of heart, and it's isn't shy away from some pretty difficult themes. And it doesn't overly like I say, I don't know what I can say that hasn't already been said. It doesn't glorify anything. I think it sort of manages to toe a very, very delicate line, actually.
100%. Totally agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so are you in touch with other actors who were part of, I mean, did you make friendships during the boot camp and the shoot that you're still in touch after 25 years?
Absolutely. I have to say, I wasn't really in touch with anyone. I was in touch with George Khalil, probably, but I haven't been in touch. I wasn't in touch with many of the guys until about 10 years ago when I went over to Normandy for an event that was organized. Was reacquainted with everyone, and then we've all sort of many of us have kept in touch since then. So that's been amazing. I consider these guys good friends now. Yeah,
Because you went through boot
I
camp
was
with them.
well. It you know yeah, it's a unique
Of course.
experience, and then we've had unique experiences since because of it. Some of these things that we've been doing, you know, tours or events over in Normandy. So I was with Nick Aaron yesterday, plays Pop Iwin at an event actually, and I mean we're in touch a lot. The boys, some of the boys, there's always stuff going on.
Oh, wow. That's just really cool. And from what I've understood, maybe I'm wrong, but this is a very unique type of connection that that was created pretty much solely within the actors from Band of Brothers. Like I mean you said you've been acting since you were 11. The question is how many productions that you've worked on, whether it was on screen, on TV, on stage, that you've had such a bond with people over so many years.
Yeah, I mean, none of them.
Exactly. No, that's
But
And so the question is, do you think it's because of the boot camp or just because of the shared experience?
it's both and more, I would say. I mean, if you look at what there isn't a comparable experience, there isn't a comparable experience probably that any of us have had, because one, before you get into the fact that it's based on reality, it's a Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks TV production. That was at the time the most expensive TV show ever made. And it's a brilliant TV show. So that's one thing. But if that were the only story,
But
you know,
one second, let me interject for one second. But 3 years earlier, they did From the Earth to the Moon, which was also, I guess, relatively on the same type of scale, and they didn't have that there. I've spoken to
Right.
people who worked on that also, or who worked on both, and they say that From the Earth to the Moon, it was a great experience, but they don't have the same type of connections that they had on Band of Brothers.
No.
And I'm not just talking about the actors, I'm talking about other people in the production also.
So yeah, so that's kind of my point. If that's one element, but we would be, you know, sort of dining out, so to speak, on that as actors, which is, you know, fine, but that's quite shallow in terms of the impact that it's had culturally or on the sort of psyche of a bunch of people. But this was then a series about the Second World War and the stories of soldiers who either were killed or who survived. So then there's suddenly a completely different dimension to it, and there's a responsibility that comes with that. Part of that responsibility is not to dine out on your your shallow, you know, bask in the reflected glory, right, of playing these real people. So then there's a sort of a bit of responsibility. Should it, you know, you don't have to take it. I mean, you guess you can just keep your mouth shut, which is fine. That's what I did for a long time. Still, you know, don't feel particularly qualified to talk about it, but here we are. But the collective experience of being in both of those situations is a really unique combination. And then you throw in something like the boot camp, which was again unique. I think Dale would say that Band of Brothers was the sweet spot. That was the culmination of his, that was the experiment exactly as he kind of would have wanted it to be. He had full
But
control on that one.
he did it in Saving Private Ryan also, didn't he?
Yeah, but I think Band of Brothers was on a different scale. I'm pretty sure that's what he said. But he had said that to me. So a number of things. And then the legacy of that series since it came out, because of the combination of those things, has created a unique piece of cultural history and World War II history and cinema history and all the rest of it, which has got an enduring value, keeps changing, has created a really, really kind of niche series of historical perspectival offshoots and things. People are still discussing it. So that has brought us all together again as well in a way that wouldn't probably have happened. And for reasons that you couldn't have conjured up were it just a series without those elements. So it's completely unique, I suppose. So there are loads of reasons why we are brought together. Boot camp is definitely part of it. It's definitely a big part of it. But it's not all just guys from boot camp.
Understandable. All right, great. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Oh God, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, no.
All right, Tim, thank you very much for joining me and talking about your experiences. This has been very educational for me too. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's great talking to you, Rob.